And the views and opinions expressed on Gaza Corner are mine, and also our guest tonight, Part 3 with Bob Souberry, and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KALW Public Media. Before we get to Bob, I just want to pass on a story that, I mean, this was so predictable, and I've been saying that for a long time on Gaza Corner, and that is that Israel is hell-bent on taking over all of Gaza. And this past week, the Security Cabinet approved a plan by indicted criminal Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for the military occupation of Gaza City, which is the first phase of completely taking over Gaza. Tens and tens of thousands of people will be displaced into probably what will resemble concentration camps in the south. There were reports in Israeli media earlier this week that Netanyahu will announce plans to occupy the entire Gaza Strip. And he apparently is doing this over the objections of the military, but not the case with Trump. Trump is providing the green light. So I do want to pass that story along. I also want to do something I've never done before in Gaza Corner. This is not going to be a contest in that you win a prize or anything, but it's still something I think worth doing. I'm going to give you a couple of quotes, and by email, tell me who you think it is. You can just put Gaza Corner in the subject field. So no prize other than tangential respect. And the email is tangentsradio@gmail.com. Tangentsradio@gmail.com. So you ready? Okay. This is a Congress person, and here's the quote. The truth is, AIPAC doesn't like it because I unapologetically represent America. AIPAC needs to register as a foreign lobbyist by U.S. law because they are representing the secular government of a nuclear-armed Israel 100%. What congressperson said that? Recently, very recently. Also posted on, actually, I don't think it was said, if I have to be absolutely correct. It was posted on social media. Also posted on social media by the same congressperson. Good morning to everyone who is fed up with AIPAC. And the reason the congressperson was targeting AIPAC was because AIPAC was targeting this congressperson. So who might that be? Now let's go. Don't be shy. I know there's no prize here, but I'm refreshing the screen and I see no guesses. Really? No one wants to take a guess who might have said that in Congress? Come on, I'll give you a few more seconds. Maybe I'll come up with a different quote. Here's one. This was earlier in the month. Quote, Israel bombed the Catholic Church in Gaza, and that entire population is being wiped out as they continue their aggressive war in Gaza. And these remarks were made after this congressperson had a failed bid to remove $500 million, a half a billion dollars, of American military funding that Congress had approved as part of its annual defense support for Israel. So who is this person? Sarah, are you stepping up? Come on now. Jasmine Crockett? No. Okay, so no one is really participating. It is the one, the only, Marjorie Taylor Greene of the state of Georgia. She became the first Republican in Congress to describe the situation in Gaza as a quote-unquote genocide. Not only breaking with the Republican Party, but the, you know, most of the Democrats don't even say that, right? Schumer, head of the Senate, Hakeem Jeffries, head of the House for the Democrats, they won't go there. The actual quote from Marjorie that got AIPAC all upset. It's the most truthful and easiest thing to say that October 7th in Israel was horrific and all hostages must be returned. But so is the genocide, humanitarian crisis, and starvation happening in Gaza. AIPAC, you know, doesn't pull any punches, called Marjorie Taylor Greene's position, quote, a betrayal of American values. Yeah, it's an American value to support genocide. I didn't know that. But, you know, that's AIPAC's view. Quote, again, AIPAC, you expect anti-Israel smears from Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, but now Marjorie Taylor Greene has joined their ranks, spouting the same vile rhetoric and voting against the U.S.-Israel alliance. Yeah. Okay. So that's that. And now I want to move to part three of, and we've never done this before, three parts with one guest, but Bob Souberry is that special. For the last 2 weeks, Bob spoke about being on the Handala, the vessel that recently was intercepted in international waters, which is, of course, illegal, by the Israelis, and all 21 passengers, including Bob, were taken captive. And they had humanitarian aid that they were trying to challenge the siege and bring the aid in. And the interview was actually done talking to Bob on the vessel about an hour before the Israelis attacked it. And he was commenting about he could see ships coming and he could see drones all around. And then he said, I can't talk anymore. And he had to go to work. Those were the first two Gaza Corners. If you missed them, if you want to hear them, email tangentsradio@gmail.com, tangentsradio@gmail.com. I will send them to you. This is part three. This has to do with the murder in broad daylight of Odeh Hathelin. Bob, once he was released from detention, a day later learned about his murder, and he went to visit his village. And we will resume with that particular part of a Gaza Corner, which is about 25 minutes. So this is part three with Bob Souberry, and it will resume with Bob shortly after being released from detention. And he was released along with one other person before any of the others because they are dual citizens of Israel and the United States. So they were given more lenient treatment. So he leaves detention and immediately he speaks about receiving a phone call. This is the voice of Bob Souberry on Gaza Corner.
It was at that point when we met our lawyers, and I had given the lawyers, I had given our lawyer people to contact in Israel, and the lawyer gets a call and hands me the phone, and it was Odeh from Umm al-Khair.
Oh, my.
And with him were two other really good friends of mine from Umm al-Khair, whom I've spent lots and lots of time with, and have become very, very close with over the last 5 years. And they were laughing. I told them, hey, I'm an ex-con. I just got released out of jail. And they were laughing, and they said, when are you coming? Come tonight. Odeh was insistent on we drop everything and just come straight over there. And I said, Odeh, we haven't eaten in 30 hours. We haven't slept in 30 hours. I can barely stand up. I got to go to sleep.
And this is, for, just so everyone's clear, this is Odeh Hathelin, who 24 hours from that point was murdered by an Israeli settler.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he wanted you to come there out of just, you love each other, you're close friends, and he wants to see you, or was there some alarm bells going off and he wanted you to help because you do work known as protective presence?
No, they just wanted to see me. I mean, and the other two guys were in the background yelling, yeah, come on, come on. It was just beautiful to to hear their voices, and it was just so good to hear them, you know, after the ordeal. Yeah, I was just too tired, and believe me, I've given plenty of thought to that decision, given what happened soon after that moment. And then from there, a friend of mine picked us both up, took her to her apartment, and we were able to shower and sleep in a regular bed for the first time in a week. Then the next day, we did some shopping and stuff, and then we got the news that Oda had been shot, that the village had been raided. One of the guys that was on the phone with Oda when I was talking to him got hit in the head with an excavator ball, those big bars that they used to break up stones.
But that was not an accident.
That was not an accident, no. They were trying to stop the excavator from coming in to the village because the excavator ran over the fence, was crushing their olive trees and other...
And water pipes.
You know, like, and the water pipe, yeah. Yeah, well, they did bust the water pipe, the water main that fed the whole village. And they were trying to stop it. They were not being violent or anything at the time. They were just yelling, stop, stop. They stood in front of the tracks, and the guy just kept coming. And Ahmad was one of the activists that were trying to stop the excavator from advancing.
This is a cousin of Oda?
Yes.
He was knocked unconscious, and at that point...
Well, it fractured his shoulder and just slapped him hard on the side of the head. I mean, it knocked him out, knocked him down on the ground. And it was deliberate. You can see it in the video where the operator actually maneuvers the big bar coming down and hits him right in the head.
This is the village of Khalkhir, where you are actually calling me from right now. This is Oda's village. And
yes.
I'd like to play, you know, an audio soundbite that was recorded on July 30th on Democracy Now! And this is Ala Hafleen, who is Oda's cousin and brother-in-law.
Yesterday, suddenly, the Israel's bulldozers and the settlers were working here in the land of Khalkhir. And then they're trying to move the bulldozer from the land to the settlement. And there's a private Palestinian land for us between them. And we tell them peacefully, don't do that. There's so many trees. There's a fence. You will destroy everything. Don't do any of that. Stop. We're trying peacefully to stop them. We call them many times. Stop, stop. And they never hear to us. And they continue until he beat one of my brothers in his head with the bulldozers. And he was in coma. Then after that, he moved and continued. And as you see from here, he destroyed the fence and came here. And the bulldozer is going inside. And the other settlers, Union Levy, the very, very well-known settlers, Union Levy arrived to the place here. There's no dangers for him. There's no one. We just was shouting, tell him, why are you doing that? We will call the police. This is not wrong. This is not right. This is what they think that you're doing. This is a private Palestinian land, according to even to the Israel's court. This is a Palestinian land. And they never hear to us. They never listen to us. They continue to do whatever they want. When they arrive here, I was the one who's in front of him. I just filming him, trying to stop him. I tell him, please don't shoot. Don't shoot anyone. There's so many people. There's a children. Stop. And suddenly he's starting shooting a lot of shell pellets up everywhere. And Oud was inside the center community, far from the event. He even didn't participate in anything. And they shoot Oud. Oud, the peaceful resistance man. Oud is the teachers. Oud is the father of the children. Oud is my cousins. This is my sister's husband. Three sons left without father. Because why? Because Yanon Levy, Trump decided to lift the sanction from him and give him the permission to continue to kill the Palestinians. This is what we see every day. This is what we're suffering every day. This is not from today. 4 years ago, they killed also my uncle Sheikh Suleiman by the same way, by the bulldozers run over him. When this will stop, we just want to live in peace, with our dignity, with our freedom, without suffering, with our rights.
That's courtesy of Democracy Now! That is Oda Hafleen's cousin, Ala Hafleen, describing the horrific murder of Oda. We should mention that he wasn't the only one to die that day. Another member of the community, Ibrahim Al-Fakir, also died as a result of a severe stroke during the attack.
I know he had a stroke. I didn't know he died. That's news to me, Dory.
Bob Subari is our guest on Gaza Corner. He's in that village right now, in the village of Umm Al-Khir. You were very close friends with Oda, and about 1,000 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank since October of 2023. I'm not sure a death has gotten more publicity than this one, even though the corporate media has dropped the ball. A lot of other media has not. The BBC did cover it pretty well. 972 magazine has the best of any source that I've read, and this is linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. It's called "The Most Peaceful Person, Umm Al-Khir Mourns Activist Slain by Israeli Settler." And it goes into absolute detail as to why a settler by the name of Yenon Levy is the murderer. Now, most media is not saying that. They're saying alleged murderer. But there's no doubt after you read that article that you will conclude that he was the murderer. So tell me about your friendship and just what made Oda so very special.
He was really, really a leader in that community. His mentor was Eid Hathalin. And Eid is one of the most peaceful guys I've ever met in my life. Oda idolized Eid. He told me that. You know, he told me. He said Eid was my mentor.
So tell me, Bob, how long had you known Oda? And tell me about his, I know he had 3 young kids, a wife. He was a soccer fanatic. They were about to build a soccer field. They got a grant from an internationalist who helped with that. I mean, tell us more about the person.
Well, I mean, he was just really special. I mean, he spoke really good English. There was almost no cultural barrier. All the activists loved him because, you could relate to him really, really easily. He had a great sense of humor. He was a loving, open guy, very, very generous. If anybody had a problem, he was there to fix it. You know, he had a lot of influence in that village. If any activist had a problem, he would help them as he would any of the members of his own community. But he was especially attentive to members of his community. And like the last time I was there, I'll just give you an example. One of his cousins had a new child. She was only, like a month old when I was there, and she had kidney problems. I helped ferry her to and from the doctor to get evaluated. But her father hasn't been able to work for a long, long time because of the restrictions. And, after October 7th, everything just shut down. So money was a big issue. And Oda approached me and he says, "Look, we have a problem with a couple families. We need to raise some money. Can you help me?" I said, "Sure, Oda." So we did. I called my wife and she did a fundraiser, and we got the funds raised and got it to them. But he was so, so concerned about them. Every day he would say, "How's it going? How's it going?" He really took responsibility for the people in the village. And they loved him for that. And they trusted him. If you saw him around his kids, I mean, your heart just melted.
How old are his kids?
His oldest is 5, going to be 6. I don't know. I can't remember his birthday. That's Watan. The other one was born a couple of years after. So it was probably maybe between 2 and 3, maybe 3. And then he had a newborn, which is about approaching, 9 months now, I guess.
We have a photo at the Tangents website, tangents.com. Just go to the left-hand column, click on the Tangents playlist, and scroll down to the Gaza Corner section. He's got a big smile, and he's got his three kids draped all over him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. His kids could do no wrong. I mean, he disciplined them when they had to, but, you know, for the most part, they're very free with their kids. I mean, they give their kids a lot of leeway. There's enough restrictions on their movement and on the things they can do and can't do by the surrounding settlement of Carmel that they're very concerned that their children have a childhood. You know, they're free enough and unencumbered emotionally and mentally to play, to learn. And that is their priority. Children come first. I've always been impressed not only by their care and the treatment of their kids, but also the playfulness and the friendliness of their children. You know, whenever I come, the children are the first to run up, Bob, 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 and they come and they hug you and they jump up. I mean, it just melts your heart.
The voice you're listening to is Bob Souberry, our guest on Gaza Corner tonight. I'm Dori Stein. Gaza Corner is every Saturday night at 11 o'clock. And this was recorded on Friday, August 1st. And Bob is phoning in from, or shall I say, signaling in from Umm al-Khair, the village that Ode Hatheline was the leader and was murdered this past Monday night, July the 28th.
One thing we didn't talk about
was
the fact that the army came in, has been doing nightly systematic raids, pulling out the leading male figures in the village. They had pulled out, as of yesterday, 18. Hmm. 18 people. I mean, it's a small village. The other thing I want to convey is how the IDF are doing their raids, how they're doing everything they can to disrupt the mourning process. First of all, they wouldn't let them build a tent, and they built it anyway, and then people arrived, and they brought out that same excavator and started breaking rocks right outside the tent, you know, making a loud noise where, you know, people are praying, people are communing with one another, people are sharing stories. They just try as hard as they can to extinguish the humanity of Palestinians.
Now, we're talking on Friday, August 1st, and Ode's body has still not been returned to the village. In the Jewish religion, 24 hours is the time that from death to burial, 24 hours.
Correct.
You know, in Islam, it's also 24 hours. So Israel is denying that 24-hour doctrine that applies to both religions. You talk about stripping humanity from this. There's a clear example also.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the disruption of the mourning process. I was talking a moment ago about the same excavator that they were using, you know, to encroach and destroy their land, their water. They were using to break up rocks during the mourning process. They're mourning his death. People are arriving. Lots of people are there. They're communing. They're telling stories. They're praying. And meanwhile, there's this excavator out there going, bop, 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 bop. I mean, it's really loud. It shakes the ground. They're doing everything they can to deny the Palestinians their traditional ceremonies, respecting the death of, you know, one of their most valued and loved members of their community. When I first arrived there, people came out of their homes, you know, because they know me. I've been there for a long time. Grabbed me, put their arms around me, and just started bawling. Being there in the mourning tent, I've had the opportunity to speak with cousins and the brother brothers of Ode, you know, and they just opened up their hearts to me. I mean, it's so sad telling me how we don't really know how we're going to be able to go on with his death, but also the inhumanity of settlers not even recognizing the fact that they need to go through this process. They need to mourn.
They don't want to provide the Palestinians with a proper grieving phase. They don't want to accommodate that. This is not atypical. This is typical. They do that whenever they can.
You know, I think there's another aspect to this where, you know, they're not really afraid of the Palestinians. First of all, they're not armed. They're not allowed to be armed. They're so controlled. And the settlers all have arms, and the army is there, and the police are there. I think they're afraid of the ideological threat that Palestinians present to them. I mean, they have a culture. They have a rich culture. They have rich ceremonies. They have tight communities, much more so than the settlements. I mean, the settlements are basically there as outposts to steal their land. And they're very good at it, restricting their access to farming, restricting their access to grazing land. I mean, this has been advanced to the point where they can't graze anymore. They can't farm anymore in most cases. So economically, they're being strangled. They're limited in their movement. Even people that have jobs oftentimes can't get there because there might be a flying checkpoint. Flying checkpoint are those that the army or police will throw up all of a sudden. Sometimes even settlers will do it and they can't leave or enter their village. They're squeezing them. Yeah. They're physically squeezing them. Since I was here just a couple months ago, they moved the settlement of Carmel, which surrounds Umm al-Khair. It's grown around Umm al-Khair. When I first started coming here, it surrounded Umm al-Khair. I used to say on three sides. They're surrounded on three sides, I used to tell people. Now they're surrounded on four sides. And they moved that fence in 10 meters into the village, literally squeezing them. It took up their playing field for the kids. It took up a lot of where they were growing sage. It's insidious what's happening there. And they persist. The Palestinians persist. And they persist in a beautiful, spiritual, nonviolent way. And I think that's a threat.
Yeah. In a 2010 piece in the New York Times, Nicholas Kristof described Carmel, this is 2010, as, quote, a lovely green oasis that looks like an American suburb. It has lush gardens, kids riding bikes, and air-conditioned homes. It also has a gleaming, electrified poultry barn that it runs as a business. Beyond its barbed wire fencing, the Bedouins of Umm al-Khair in shanties are denied connection to the electricity grid, and also the barns for their livestock and toilets, and all attempts to build permanent dwellings are demolished. Elad Orion, an Israeli human rights activist, noted that the chickens of Carmel's poultry farm get more electricity and water than the Palestinian Bedouin nearby.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. The Palestinians always bring that up. Yeah. They always remark about that. I'll just add one more thing. The utilities that go to the settlement run through Umm al-Khair. So not only do they not have access to it, but it runs through their property.
Bob, we know that genocide is happening in Gaza, and there were powerful figures in the current Israeli government and also the President of the United States who are advocates of essentially depopulating Gaza. At least you never know with Trump changing his mind, but that's what he has said at various points. The Israeli government is full in on that. Are there parallels between what has happened since October of 2023 in Gaza and what could happen in the West Bank, where we've seen about 1,000 people dead in that time period, as well as especially shepherding communities just completely erased off the map, and many thousands of Palestinians ethnically cleansed in the West Bank.
At least to me, you know, from years of visiting the area, it's clear to me, if you look at the Bantustanization of the West Bank, there are basically walls around all the urban areas in the West Bank. They're very easy to control, and they're well separated from each other. So, I mean, the largest city in the West Bank is Hebron. Oftentimes, they only have one or two checkpoints that are open at a time, restricting access and egress. And what it's doing is it's squeezing them economically. It's making it very, very difficult. And they can be controlled at any time. They can shut them off and basically make them open air prisons, much like Gaza has been described for, you know, the last decade and a half. I see them setting up the West Bank to be treated much like the way Gaza is being treated right now. All it takes is a trigger. And I think October 7th for this government was a gift from heaven. It allowed them an excuse and a reason to go in and basically start committing a genocide in Gaza, hoping that they would leave on their own or they'll starve them all. I mean, they're using starvation as a weapon of war. That can very easily be done in the West Bank, given what's happening right now. And all they need to do is get the rest of the people out of Area C, which is where Umm al-Khair and Safar Yatta are right now, force them out of their villages, out of Area C, into these densely populated urban areas. And since October 7th, the speed with which they're working on that has increased exponentially.
These were from the Oslo Accords, the areas A, B, and C. Area C is about 60% of the West Bank, but it's not like A and B are free of Israeli influence or infiltration. So the entire West Bank, I mean, to me, it's already happened. When you visit the West Bank and you look around, all you see are settlements. A and B are still controlled by the Palestinian Authority, but that could change also. You know, who's going to stop Israel from controlling whatever they want to control?
Yeah, and it should be mentioned that the Palestinian Authority acts as
a collaborator.
Yeah, they work for the IDF. You know, they're subcontractors for the IDF. They do what the IDF tells us.
We should say that the IDF is the Israeli Defense Forces.
Yeah, I mean, the IDF or the Israeli Defense Forces use the PA as though they're a subcontractor to them. And the PA complies. I mean, there's a big demonstration in Ramallah, the supposed capital of the West Bank, called Strike Day. I was at it with a number of other activists and many, many Palestinians. There were thousands of people there. It was huge. They were primarily striking against the PA. The PA chose not to make an appearance there and create a violent confrontation. Yeah, the PA is part of the problem.
Yeah. Bob Souberry has been our very special guest on Gaza Corner tonight. Thank you so much, Bob, for last week, for this week, and for all the work you do to help protect particularly vulnerable Palestinian communities and all your activist work on behalf of Palestinian rights. I'm sure the listeners are so grateful that you've taken this time at, what time is it now? Like 1:25 in the morning your time. Amazing.
Yeah.
So thank you so very much. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Dory, and thank you for getting the word out. And, you know, I encourage anyone who has any doubts or is curious, please go to the West Bank and see for yourself.
Yep.
It's safe. The people are friendly. I spend months there. It's a beautiful community, and people have to know what's really going on here.
Amen.